All right, Aubrey, thank you for joining the Poetically Yours podcast. I know I talked to you before and I was thinking, did I already have him on this particular podcast outside of the weekly segment where we feature the poems? And then I realized you were a part of the art crawl that I did last fall when you were at Enscape Collective, I believe.
Yep, Enscape Collective in Rockford, yeah.
But I want to really take a moment to let it breathe so that you can really tell your story. I was listening to a podcast with you. I don't remember her name. I didn't catch it, but there's a woman in Rock Island who has a podcast. I thought that was a wonderful conversation. Oh, I was like, yeah. What's her name?
Annika.
Wonderful conversation. Yeah, I saw 2 hours. I was like, 2 hours, but it went pretty quickly. So of course, I want to start off by asking you about your earliest writing. I know you started writing when you were 10, but do you remember what that was, what you were writing about?
I remember one of the stories for sure. Like when I was 10 and all that, I would just write about like kind of like concrete day-to-day things. Like the one poem I remember the most, or story more so, was like my experience running a cross country practice and the friends I was running with, the places we ran, describing my friends, like how they looked, their like social attributes and stuff like that. So that's one that I remember for sure. But a lot of my writing that I did during high was just kind of just me that like telling stories that of things that I experienced and stuff like that on a day to day as like a 10-year-old and all that. So just very kind of like, you know, very pure and innocent, just, you know, whatever was going on around me. And that's where I kind of started writing, you know, just writing about stories of stuff around me. And then slowly that kind of like morphed its way into poetry.
Now tell me about your high school years. I know when I was in high school, we had a poetry class, and the guys that were in that class were like, I'm not a poet. You know, at that time, hip hop was very, very like up and rising, and they wanted to be known as more so rappers. Tell me about your life in high school with you being a writer years before that even started.
Yeah. So yeah, like, cause like, yeah, when I was in high school, that was still around, you know, Kanye had his graduation album come out when I was in high school.
Oh, that was a wonderful time, huh?
Yeah. Oh yeah. We were, I feel like we were at like the peak of like where like artists like Kanye and Lil Wayne, who just like pushed out mixtapes the way he was, like he did, like it was just a really good time hip hop wise. So for me, like I always tell people, and you've probably heard this like from past interviews I've done, but like hip hop is what inspired me to write, get into like poetry more. Cause like even just story writing, cause I was always like very like curious and like really drawn to the storytelling of rap. But as like a junior high and high schooler, I was like, I don't know if I can do that, but I can tell stories, you know? So in high school, you know, I wrote all throughout high school. It was kind of one of those things where I kind of held in the balance of like, I would show my friends, like my friends who I ran cross country with, my teammates who knew me well, I'd show them some of the stuff that I wrote and they loved it, you know, they always loved it. But again, I think like, as you kind of said, in like high school, when I was going, like poetry was like, I feel like in the high school that I went to, because we weren't exposed to poetry that much, it wasn't like the cool thing. Like it was like one of those very like, oh, like I don't write poetry. I'm a boy. I'm this, any other, you know? So it wasn't a cool thing, you know? So I think I'd always kind of just keep it to myself, but I would show people around me who I trusted. You know, I remember the first poem I gave to somebody, you know, as kind of as a gift was one of my friend's mom's, when I was a junior in high school. It was like a Christmas present, and like she loved it and kept it in her house for the longest. So, you know, little things like that always kept me going, like, oh, okay, I think I like this thing. Plus, I had a really good teacher in high school, Miss Johnson, who ironically, I'm actually teaching a poetry course with the same teacher right now on a weekly basis with high schoolers. So it's kind of like that cool, like full circle moment, because she's the first teacher who like exposed us to like performance poetry, you know, outside of just like page poetry and all that. So that kind of all the more drew me to the art, and kind of like I think subconsciously planted one of those seeds of like, oh, this is kind of cool, like I didn't know that could be a thing. But yeah, just having like teachers like that and like the friends who I shared my work with kind of like not kind of affirm it in the way that they did, that's what kind of kept me writing, even though it was kind of one of those things where I still kind of kept it to myself for the most part, and then shared it with people that I trusted. So yeah, I wrote all throughout high school, alongside people who are like MCs, rappers, and all that. Whenever we'd have like the in high school, we stayed in the time where we had like still like lunch table, like ciphers and stuff where people would just beat on the tables and all that. And I was always so like, wow, like this is cool. And I would always be around that and absorbing that. And I think that's what kind of added into my creativity now, you know, just being exposed to that, but still being like, you know what, I like poetry. I enjoy this art form, but poetry is something that I'm drawn to, you know, intimately. So, yeah.
You were born and bred in Rock Island, and I don't know too many people from that area. Tell me, how did growing up there inspire you? I listened to the poem on that podcast that you recited, The Sounds of Rock Island. I thought that was pretty dope. So you have to tell me more about how you draw from inspiration in the place that you grew up in and that you still live in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good question. I think... I think now, still kind of being somebody who lives in Rock Island and all that, literally like two or three blocks away from my childhood, like home and all that, you know, I draw my inspiration the same way I did when I was like in junior high. I'm just like a lot more conscious of it, like stories, things that I'm seeing, things that I'm hearing. Like I'm really drawn by like, you know, the things happening around me, you know, just like the concrete, you know, the things that I'm seeing, hearing, and just also like, also kind of the internal inspirations of just like how things that I'm seeing, kind of like what they make me think, how they're like creating these abstracts in my mind that I'm like wanting to kind of create and all that. So I think a lot of my, just being in Rock Island, like, it's one of those things where, poetry, we have poets in Rock Island, right? Like people who love it as art form, even people who are like just super, you know, who are very active, like in their communities, you know, in a very radical revolutionary way, like Shelley Moore Guy, who's like a very revolutionary ancestor we have in this community. She was one of those poets who, you know, she grew up reading Langston Hughes, like Black poets and all that. So like, She was a poet in our community that built a really unique poetry infrastructure, you know. But for the most part, there wasn't a lot of poets around in my area and all that. So I just have to say that, like, I never had that inspiration of, like, oh, there's this poet here who inspires me to continue to write, or there's this poet here that inspires me to continue to write. So for me, which I think that was a great thing, because it kind of challenged me to, like, be more creative in, like, how I got my inspiration. Like, I couldn't get my inspiration from, you know, the myriad of like poetry open mics going on from Monday to Sunday, because we didn't have that. Chicago did, but we didn't have that. So it's like, okay, where am I going to draw my inspiration from? All I had was the people around me, you know, the things that I saw, things I experienced, and really kind of like forming for myself what that poetry sounds like. Because again, I didn't have like a blueprint of like what this sounded like and all that. And again, I think that's good because it made me more, for lack of a better term, original kind of in how I created, because there was no template poets to look at. So it's like, okay, I'm going to just observe what I'm looking at, and we're just going to take a stab at whatever we write. We're going to call that poetry, you know? So I think it's the same thing now, where I'm just inspired by, like, when I walk down my block and I see like cats walking through our neighborhood. I see neighbors talking to each other. I see like the little floating leaf that like hangs from that invisible web and all that. I'm like, oh, I'm inspired by all these things. So it just taught me to be like, conscious of life happening around me and letting that be what inspires me, you know? So I enjoy that Rock Island's been that. I'm just inspired by everything I'm seeing and taking in.
Yeah, I find myself listening to phrases and things people say, and I'm always saying, that's a poem, that's a poem, just from one little phrase.
You and I do the same thing. So we do the same exact thing. I always say that to my students. I told them, that's a poem, and you got 24 hours, like, write something from that.
Now, Aubrey, I know that your life is engulfed in poetry. You're able to be fortunate enough to work in this field that you love. You know, a lot of artists have to have a different job and try to do their passion on the side, but you are all in it. Tell me about that journey. Like, did you set out to say, this is what I'm going to do and focus on? And did you have any idea that it would blow up to what is now come to?
Oh, no, I didn't think it was going to be what it is now. I knew that, like, just because I love the art form so much, I knew that I wanted to write. You know, like I said, I've been writing since I was 10 years old. And even my freshman year of college in 2010, I majored in creative writing because I knew that I wanted to write stories. I'm like, I didn't know what that looked like. You know, I was like, maybe I'm just writing stories for myself and all that, you know. So I think, like, and this is something I'm always telling my students, which is kind of like important to like say that, like, this all kind of like came from just initially the love of the art. Like, I just love doing the art. I love writing poems, you know, even if it was just to myself. I love just like writing and, you know, expressing myself through writing. And when I was 23, that's where I was like really exposed to it as a performance art, you know, and then it kind of like shifted to like, oh, like I love this art, but now I'm like really drawn to like sharing it by word and all that. Because of that love again, you know, I'd find myself at like an open mic on a weekly basis, like in the Quad Cities in Davenport. Then it got to a place where, you know, off of that same love and drive, with the help of my mentor at the time, I started open mic, which is the same open mic we still have now, Ring Rhetoric. It's been going on for about 12 years now. So off of that same love, I started open mic where I could share my work and invite others to share their work. And then off of that same love, you know, people would like have me come to their events outside of town and outside of the Quad Cities, around the Quad Cities, and off the love, like I would just kind of like do that. But it wasn't until like, you know, I can't tell you exactly where it was where I was like, okay, this is a career, because I think it just happened so fluidly of just like, I just loved the art, you know, where I didn't start the art saying like, okay, this is going to be a career and by year five, we're going to be here. So it's like, no, like, you know, if I just do this off of just the love and passion of doing it, that's all I'm worried about. And I think things just kind of like naturally unfolded themselves. And I was lucky enough to have like mentors around me because, you know, like you said, like there's artists who, you know, rightfully so. I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I think it's a great thing when artists stay in a space of like just wanting to do the art off of the love. I think that's what you always have to do, you know. But also, like, I think with that, some artists just don't really care about the making it a career part and all that, because that might not be their walk or their role, you know. But I was lucky enough to, because I think like the universe just knew where I was going with this art form. They put mentors in my life that showed me like, hey, like, if you want to do this as a thing, you can. You just have to like do this, that, and the other, and do it faithfully, you know. And like having mentors like that kind of like made it so I was like, okay, now, because I know I love this, so if I love it, why would I not want to do it as like a career, right? So like having those mentors kind of just helped me shape understanding how to turn like my writing, you know, because I write poetry, but I also write prose, and like getting into like creative nonfiction and stuff like that, but how to turn that into like a profession. And not only that, how to kind of take my skills as an educator and also use that to like make a profession of poetry, you know, like having those mentors who kind of showed me that really kind of made it possible for me to like still love the art and do it out of love, but realize how to kind of like make that a part of my profession. So I'm grateful to those mentors and grateful that it worked, you know, and it continues to work, you know, because there's no promise that it continues to work. It's just, you know, something's kind of helps us still. So I'm grateful for that.
Now tell me about that process as far as mentor. So you grew up writing. So you have this gift, this talent, and I'm pretty sure it's easy for you to just sit down and write. At what point did you realize it's important to have someone to help lead you, although you already had the gift?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's like, I think like as an adult now, not realizing when I was younger, because like I was very like, you know, in a good way, I was very like self-sufficient minded in the sense of like,
I like the way you put that.
Yeah, of just like, okay, like if I got to do 10 things at a time. And I think it's also worth saying that, like, because like I was involved in sports from junior high to college, you know, I ran cross country and track all from like junior high when I was 10 years old to college when I was 23. So like I had this idea of what work ethic looked like. So like when, you know, when it came to like working and all that, I knew how to like, okay, if I need to do 10 jobs at a time, I'm going to do that. You know, if I need to, you know, if I need to write and perform, and 5 years later, if I need to write, perform, and send emails to whoever, like, I'll do all these roles by myself if I can. So, like, that's where I kind of, like, started with my journey, even with mentors. You know, even when I had mentors, I still was very, like, okay, I'm going to try to do this myself. But I think it came to a point in time where, like, I kind of just had this realization, like, in my later 20s of, like, man, like, it's good to have that disciplinary mindset of, like, being self-sufficient, but the double-edged sword is, like, I only have a finite amount of energy, you know? I can't keep doing these 10 to 28 things by myself, or else I'm going to be burnt out. I'm going to be sick a lot. My creativity is not going to function the way it's supposed to, because I'm burning myself out on all these different tasks, you know? And it's kind of like having the sense of, like, humility there to realize that. I realize all the more, like, okay, even though it's uncomfortable, because, again, like, I like doing things myself, like, I'd need to depend on people around me, or else this thing is going to be very, it's going to have a very short shelf life, because I can't operate by myself, you know? And I think having that mindset, you know, I'm grateful that it, and having that mindset, I feel like whenever we have, like, those mindsets and realizations for stuff, the universe manifests what we need in those moments. So, like, and kind of realizing that, I've had people who are great friends who are skilled in certain things, like doing emails, doing marketing, taking pictures, like writing grants, they'd come alongside of me as kind of like, I feel like a universe asked question of, like, okay, how much are you going to trust these people now to do this? And, like, I think with that, you know, with what I do as an artist and as a poetry educator, it's because of those people's help and me trusting people to, like, help me with certain things, that, like, everything's grown more than it could by myself, you know? And I think that's just a testament to, you know, I think in this creative journey, you have to trust people, you know, you got to find people. Again, I emphasize people you can trust, you know, people who have your well-being and what you're creating at in their best interest, and lean on them, and don't try to be self-sufficient. Cause I think as artists, we get so stuck in that I'm going to do it myself and all this. And, like, that's a great place to start, but you will burn out. So I'm just grateful for the friends who have came alongside me, and family, who came alongside me, where I didn't have to burn out, you know, and I could just be like, let me, even though I can do this, let me trust this person and be more free in my purpose of being a creative, you know?
I like that. And I think people need to hear that, especially when, like, for myself, and I'm sure many others, when I think about a mentor, I think of someone who's doing what I do. But you're opening it up to say, you know, this person could be a mentor. They're not doing what you're doing, but they are specializing in this, and it could help you, even though you don't have to take on and learn what they're doing. And I think people need to hear that, to say, hey, if you're looking for help, it doesn't have to be always someone that's in the same field that you're doing. Like you talked about the marketing. And I think that the trust thing is very important. Now, before we get into you reciting your first poem, I would like to talk about, because you talk about your students a lot, I would like to talk about your organization, the nonprofit Young Lions Roar. And I want you to tell me why you started that and why that work is so important.
My bachelor's degree is in educational studies. So I graduated with a degree in education, you know, and even before kind of getting that degree, I was working in schools, like, as a paraeducator, teacher's assistant, literally from every grade to, like, as crazy as it sounds, like, infants. Like, I'd, like, literally, like, be a teachers assistant to infants up to, like, literally junior high at that time, you know? So I was always really involved even before I had my degree. And while I was getting my degree, I was working with schools and, like, going to schools as, like, a visiting poet to speak to kids. And then I would, like, work at different schools, like, outside the Quad Cities, like Jacksonville, Illinois, or Parsons, Kansas. And, like, I would teach workshops and all that. So when I got my degree and, like, got to working for my first year as an educator, like, it was one of those things where, like, for me personally, I just quickly found out that it wasn't for me, just because, like, I had this vision in my mind of, like, what I could do for students to kind of help them with not just the academic part, because, like, you know, I think that part's always taken care of with all the stuff we have coming out on a yearly basis. Could it be better? Oh, absolutely. You know, it could definitely be better, but I think it's another whole conversation. But I think for me, I was always so worried about, I was always so, like, focused on, like, my students on a mental, emotional basis, where whenever my students came in when I was a junior high teacher, I would have them journal in the morning about their feelings. We talk about them in circles literally from Monday to Friday. But those things weren't really like prioritized by the school or even the schools that I work at, because they're so focused on like the, you know, the testing scores, the things that bring in the finances and all that. And I just found myself like kind of really burnt out by that system and not really like agreeing with it. But I still knew that that it was my like ordained purpose to like be an educator. So it was like one of those things of like, okay, how does education look? Because I resigned from my junior high teaching job and literally right after, you know, with both kind of like my thinking, but also with just kind of like the influence I was giving to me as well. I came up with this idea of like, okay, like what if I create a program where I'm focusing on poetry for the sake of like creative expression and mental wellness, you know? And I would tell my friends who worked in certain parts in creativity about this purpose. And like, again, like I'm just grateful to the friends who like had an open ear and a willingness to help, where they would like affirm like, yo, this is awesome. And I know three schools that could use this, or hey, I'll open up my church for this. And not only that, I'll apply for grants for you guys to like do this, you know? So like when, with all that kind of like as a receiving, being on the receiving end of that, I was like, okay, I got to really make this a thing now. So then that was like, you know, that was like 4 years ago. So like out of that, my nonprofit now, Young Lions Roar, came out of that, you know, just having this program that works with schools like all throughout the states and providing, you know, resources focused on literary arts for like creative expression, mental wellness, and reading, writing, development, you know. And you know, it just kind of like writing, you know, just kind of like my whole journey in writing, right? Like I created this out of like first and foremost out of just like a love for, but more too of just like, okay, this has got to be my job now too. So I had to look at it a little bit different than the poetry part, because like this is my only job, so we got to make something happen. Like,
yeah, that, you know, that makes it a priority.
Yeah, and I think that's great, because like I think with that, you know, with that like willingness to work by faith, all the things that were supposed to happen came because of my faithfulness to that. And again, just the gratitude of like people seeing our vision and coming alongside and saying like, hey, I'm not even worried about getting paid right now, but I just believe in what you're doing and want to help with that. So again, like we're 4 years in kind of like our operations, and we continue to grow, not just for, and I think it's for multiple reasons, right? I think just in this time of space, you know, when you think about art getting cut from schools, you know, there's schools in Cedar Rapids right now, in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, that are talking about cutting certain schools that are focused on the arts because they don't see their, like, they don't see the relevancy of art for kids. And we've been seeing it for years, you know, art's the first thing to get cut. So I think in this world where we have this like parallel of like arts getting cut and kids kind of growing in like these mental conundrums of depression, anxiety, that leads to like suicide, self-harm, you know, drug intake and all that, it's like, I think some people who are like now conscious, who are realizing, oh, we need art to help our kids express themselves, or else they're going to find an outlet that's more harmful than productive to kind of indulge in. So, you know, I think in kind of like us all the more realizing that as a community collectively, I think it just kind of like speaks to like the importance of like these programmings for schools, for kids, or for even professionals to learn how to do like with the students or communities they serve, you know? So I'm just grateful to kind of like be in that space where we have like a need that we're fulfilling, right? And we continue to fulfill.
Now, do you want to take a moment and share something with me today?
Yeah, absolutely. I can, there's a poem actually, so I just got done with this residency some weeks ago in France for his writing residency. And during that time, I was grateful enough to like have time to like focus on creative endeavor. So I used the time to memorize a lot of poems and all that. I can share one that I memorized while I was out there.
Okay, I'm jealous. I need to make time to do that.
Oh, absolutely. You know, it's always, I always tell my students like, hey, you get 5, 10, 15 out. It's just making the little spaces of time, right?
Yeah, we can memorize the songs we like.
Exactly. You know, exactly. That's the thing though. It's just like, it's just finding the rhythm in which we know how to memorize our poems. You know, there's a lot of like tricks I've kind of found to kind of help with that memorizing part.
Well, you'll have to share, but go ahead. I'm going to put myself on mute.
Absolutely. When students ask for a new sheet of paper, after scribbling out errors, crossing out thoughts when writing a new poem, I have learned to decline this request. And instead, I tell them the mistakes be best part of process. They be most holiest offering to a world and praise the Mona Lisa, who's afraid to lean a little outside the frame in fear of what others think. Presenting pristine parts while erasing imperfections of the past. My friend, neither you nor I will be given new bodies on this side of existence. Just because we've bore broken bones, sprained ankles, shattered hearts that will never heal to what they once were. This vessel is all we got, and there's no refunds nor returns. Just revival and wretched flesh. New wine that somehow learned to live in old skins and they burst but blossomed. And if you look into these eyes, some days you will see a garden that sometimes forgets how to grow. Carrying grief like seeds planted under soil beds of eyelids that split me open in ways that rainfalls and tears could only orchestrate, though I find myself leaving the concert before crescendo. Look at these hands. They still hold holes from times I put myself to crosses that never asked for a sacrifice. And these teeth still aches from times I told lies to cut others so deep that they still bleed in my memories. But I've learned that in these missteps are magic, not flaws to toss away and free throw in the trash can. They may have told you to hide your horrors. I tell you to forge those fires to fantasies. Don't fear the furnace who in her fiery fallacies forms a path that clear-cut roads can never take you nor I. And all that is asked is to have faith that in our faults we will find gold if we dig deep enough. So no. I tell these students no. In this journey with me, you will not be given a new piece of paper. I will not cover you in prayers that you wake up to this all being a nightmare, for this is life, this is process, this is messiness made monument. And yes, feet will get muddy and hands will get dirty, and you will find yourself some days crossing out your errors and shame. And when you do that, just don't erase them and don't hide them. May we see your scars so that we also know healing, because that right there is exactly where magic truly exists. Poem. Oh, thank you. I can hear over the mute. Oh, you're fine.
I'm sorry. I said that was amazing. I was just writing down a couple of lines that the first that you caught me when you said, heal what they once were, never return back to they once were. And I think about like when people go through hurt and how they sabotage their life because they're trying to protect themselves based on what they have dealt with in the past. That is wonderful to even have this conversation with young children to say, hey, this is what you have to look forward to, but you still have to live and be true to yourself. But the analogy about the teeth and the cutting others, and you think about teeth and biting, I love it. I love it.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
I love it. And you're the type of poet that I'm pretty sure if someone hears your, especially a poet hears your poetry, they should be inspired to write. Because
yeah.
it's like, oh my goodness, you're doing the work. You're not just writing. I can tell you wrote that and you wrote it again and you wrote it again and you just made sure,
yeah.
made sure that it was polished.
Yeah.
And that is important. And I think a lot of writers need to realize that in order to make a impact and really dig into the art, you do have to really write it and keep writing it until you refine it. Now, you talked about the residency. I want to find out, how did that even happen? That is amazing.
Yeah. No, it was quite the story. So, like, it's one of those things that, like, it was this residency, the Chateau Orcova. If I'm pronouncing it correctly, but I would see this, like, I saw it a bunch, like, just through social media. I would like see it and like see that was like a residency for artists. I'm like, oh, okay, that's cool. But I'm thinking like, okay, this is probably just like artists who are like visual artists, you know, because usually when residencies, they're more catered to my knowledge, you know, which may be kind of like minimal or when we kind of think about residencies, we think about visual arts and all that. So I just see it over and over. And then I would have, like, one of our creative educators tell me about this residency. It's like, okay, I know about that. I've seen that before and all that. And when I kind of saw it being a residency that also welcomed writers, It was one of those things where like I realized kind of like in my kind of journey as a writer, it's all about some aspects of like the said profession is literally like just throwing your hat in and just being okay with whatever, but just knowing that like, you know, not being worried about the yes or no, but just throwing your hat in because like that's just the work and not, you know, not being worried about like the exception or rejection, you know. So it was one of those things where like I applied for it one night, literally applied for it, and I forgot about it after I applied for it because it was one of the residency, like, you didn't hear back from, they they're very intensive with, like, kind of, like, their reviews of applications where, like, 18% of people who apply get into it, and you don't hear back for, like, 4 to 6 months. So in my mind, I'm like, I might as well just forget about this and just, and not sit around and, like, count down the days and all that. Let me just continue to do work on that. And I literally just forgot about it, right? And, like, 2 weeks later, I get an email from this residency, mind you, like 2 weeks later, saying that they saw my resume and they were like impressed by it and that I was accepted in. And this was like, mind you, it was like 4 in the morning. And I was like, okay, I don't know if this is spam or not. So let me just like, I don't know if this is like a scam email. So let me just like do my due diligence. Okay, let me see if this looks legit. The number's there, if the website's there and all that. And it ended up being kind of like a real exception letter. So I was like, okay, well, this is amazing. You know, I didn't expect that. So, after kind of like being accepted into that, I kind of just did what I needed to do to kind of like make everything kind of happen to get there. And that was like, I got accepted in October and went down at the beginning of this year in the second week of January all the way to the 26th of January. So everything kind of happened so close to each other. But yeah, it was literally just kind of saying this residency and just by faith, just being like, you know what, I'm gonna just toss this in and see what happens. And it was just one of those occasions where something stuck. So I was grateful for it because it was a really good experience to just be able to create and like be with other very genuine, you know, creatives who are just very like giving of their art and themselves. You know, it was a good experience.
Now take me through a particular day. Like what happened when you woke up and what were you doing during this time?
Yeah, absolutely. So like, I'll definitely get specific because like, I definitely kind of made a whole practice of like how I kind of handled my morning. So we stayed in a small village in France that was like about 3 hours out from Paris. So it was very like countryside, you know, the village we stayed in was about 50 people. So it was very just like homey and a lot of nature and stuff. But I stayed in this small village. I stayed in this place called the Poet's House where I shared a house with two other artists. They had an upstairs, I had a downstairs. And every morning, I'd wake up like super early, like 5:30, 6:30 a.m. Because I was like, okay, I think just the excitement of being there and being like, okay, if I have time to create, let's do it when we get up. But the place that I stayed in was really unique because there was a creek of like just very clean, like freshwater creek that like ran parallel to like this place that I stayed. So I'd wake up every morning. And mind you, it was a cold creek, you know? So like every morning I'd wake up and like get in the creek water and just kind of like have that be my wake up. That was my proverbial coffee. I don't drink coffee. So that was my proverbial, like, let's jump in this. Let's just kind of like sit in this, and like be uncomfortable in it. Cause it's cold water. So it's like, okay. It kind of forced me to kind of like, okay, I got to learn how to be one with, you know, and Bruce Lee terms, be one with the water and all that. So it was like every morning I would jump into this creek, being there for about 5-10 minutes. I would clean up, go up to the chateau, which is where a lot of the artist studios were at. So I had a studio space that I shared with four other writers, but a lot of them just kind of like stayed to themselves and wrote in their room. So I just had this whole space to like write and like rehearse and all that. So I'd go there, rehearse for about 2-3 hours. And I'll take breaks in between, right? If I had like certain parts of a poem memorized, if I memorized 200 words, I'm like, okay, I got 200 more, but let's go on a walk. Let's meditate. So I just go on a walk around the chateau, you know, take a breath, kind of like taking the nature and all that, and just go back to work and do that. But by 5 p.m. is when the artists and all, we all kind of like finish our work up and all that. So during that time, we were just kind of connecting with each other. Like, again, I think that's the part that I'm so grateful of because we kind of think of creative sometimes. We kind of stay in our own silos, right? And we're kind of very like standoffish a little bit too, where like we don't know how to connect and all that. But with the artists that were a part of this residency, we all like were just instantly family by like the second day. You know, we spend time with each other, talk with each other, share each other's art. We cry over each other's art, laugh. And we just had like this very like necessary fellowship time, you know, by the time 5 p.m. hit, and like from 5 p.m. to about like 10, we were just kind of like having like artist family time and all that. So that was literally like how our day was every day. Like, you know, next day I'd wake up 5 a.m., get in the creek, do work. And then, you know, it was a balance of like, you know, enjoying the nature around, making time for my art, but also making time for people. So we made that just like a really perfect balance. And that was kind of my everyday while I was there. So it was a really good practice of like how we kind of scheduled our day. And again, just making that connection, time to kind of connect with other artists was definitely irreplaceable for sure. Just meeting the artists I did and how quickly we connected. You don't make connections that quickly. So I definitely cherish that part for sure.
Was there any type of performance that took place while you were there?
Yeah. So after the first week, so like, cause the whole residency was like for 2 weeks, the artists get to work on like whatever their disciplines were. And at the end of the very end of the 2 weeks, the visual artists kind of like had a whole art gallery where we just kind of like go to each person's like studio, see the art they created, write notes on what we liked and appreciated about them and their art. But the first week was an open mic where like the writers, they shared their writing work, you know? So it was a very intimate group, like all 29 of us kind of like in the shared space. And like the first weekend, it was myself, a couple other like essay writers, another poet, two poets, and then a musician. And we all had this open mic where we were all kind of sharing the art that we wrote and worked on during that time. And it was like, again, when you're in a room full of like artists who like just know how to appreciate the abstractness of art and the concrete, like it just made for a special open mic, you know, because everybody was just enjoying everybody's art. Feelings were, you know, were struck, emotions were struck in good ways. So yeah, there was, and then at the end of this thing too, we would share our poems again too. So we had a lot of opportunities to kind of share our work and all that.
That's amazing. Now I know, I don't know if it was last year or a couple of years ago, you started the Write With Me, and I have been wanting to join one just to see what it's about, but I haven't been able to. Can you tell me if you're still doing that, number one, and then how has that experience been?
Yeah. So the Write With Me sessions, we haven't had one this year yet. Mainly because we have them both like in person and also like virtually and all that. And I've kind of been just figuring out what days to do virtual because I have all these things going on and all that. And in the in-person ones, we have like one of our poetry hosts here, Alicia On Demand. She hosts our community ones here. So we should be starting those up though when April comes because it's National Poetry Month. So I think that's a good time to like start these things and all that. But the Write With Me session is literally, it's just kind of like an hour of like getting people together who are like writers, writer enthusiasts and all that. And they have a space to kind of share inspiration with each other, like be inspired through different writing prompts, share poems that they've written in the past. And just a place where they kind of find inspiration and all that. So it's been a really good time. You know, like last year when we did our virtual ones, we'd have people like as far as like Arcata, California, Dubuque, Iowa, Evanston, Illinois, who would like tune in virtually to kind of like get together and write, you know, and just kind of like create community through that. I think that's a part of like, again, because, you know, writing as individual as it is, it's also a communal art too, where like when you're around people and you're sharing your ideas with people, some people will help you like expand on ideas or even affirm you and just say like, this is a good idea. Good job. Keep going. So that's just needed as a creative, you know? So just having that community and even in the in-person ones, you know, having that community where it's just like this laid back space where it's like, hey, we're not grading you on nothing. There's no like standard we're expecting y'all to reach. We're just here to create, you know, we're just here to kind of like give ourselves time, like as adults who like sometimes get so involved in like the working world and all this that we don't make time for ourselves to create. It's kind of like that forced, that gentle forced time to create of like, hey, like we got this for an hour, like come over here and just don't forget about what's out there, but maybe take what's out there and use that as inspiration here. So I love that part about it, you know, just kind of being able to be inspired by other writers and inspiring other writers to like, you know, create and just like, you know, helping them with their own craft. You know, I think that's, it's just been that's like our Write With Me sessions are great for that, just because how it connects writers together and all that and allows us to find inspiration from each other too.
I think that's cool. I think the most I've written in the past few years is when I was a part of a poetry group in Aurora at the time when I lived out there. And it made me write because it's like, I have to go to this meeting. I have to have something. So I think that's a good thing to do just to keep the juices flowing and to be around like-minded people. Now, you're also an author and you have 4 collections of poetry.
Yes, yes.
Can you tell me about when you first decided you wanted to publish a book, and if you do traditional or if you're self-publishing, and what are your thoughts on both?
Yeah, yeah. So my first poetry book that I published was in 2017. It was Unfinished. That was the title of the book. And it was just one of those moments where, like, you know, I had been writing from that point from 2014 to 2017. So I just had all these poems. And again, just kind of being someone who, like, was very, who honored the writing part of poetry, right? Not just the performance part. I just had that part of me where I, like, had all these poems. I'm like, man, all these poems that I have, I'm not going to memorize and perform all these poems. These are, like, hundreds of poems right now. But they all have a voice. I want them all to be heard and shared. So, like, what other best way than to, like, write a book, you know? So, like, in that kind of space, I kind of found out about, I just found out as I was going, you know, okay, what's self-publishing? Okay. What are page breaks? Okay. I need to do this. You know, when I do stuff, I gotta make sure that the pages that I'm writing on are the pages I'm going to print on. Like, I literally was learning as I was going, making mistakes. And I, you know, I think that's a good thing to go through, because now I went through it, I can, like, help those after, be like, hey, I made these mistakes. You ain't gotta make these mistakes and all that. But yeah, so, like, my first book was just kind of a product of, like, I just have all these poems and I want them to be shared and all that, you know? And I think after I wrote one, I just was, like, really drawn to that process too. I was like, oh, this is fun. Like, I love this process. So that's what led me to write the book after I'm Not Anti-Love, the book after that one, It Is Good As It's Written. And then my most recent one, I Took the Wrong Path. Like, it was just a love for the craft of writing. And I think now, being someone who's in grad school for creative writing and just seeing creative writing from a whole different lens, like, and how I can add what I'm learning into that creative process, it's just made me a lot more, like, you know, curious of the process and all that. So, yeah, all my books, with that said, have been self-published. This next one, I'm actually talking to a publisher right now. So I'm just kind of getting a feel for that. I'm like, okay, does it make sense and all that? Because for me, my whole thing is, like, I mean, there's pros and cons to, like, I mean, you know, there's pros on both sides. Like, when you have a publisher, you know, you have things that, like, again, it's one of those things, right, where you have, like, a team of people who help you with the things that you don't have to focus on by yourself anymore. And, like, with publishers, depending on, like, your goals creatively, like, if you're trying to win awards or, like, you know, those literary awards, Pulitzer Prize awards and all that, you need a publisher because they don't look at self-published creatives for that. So it's like, it all just depends on, like, your purpose in creating and the intentionality you have on it. For me, I haven't really been one to really care about the awards and all that. You know, for me, it's just been, again, just like how I started writing. It's like, I just want to give this out to the people. And with that, it kind of, like, forced me to, like, learn, okay, if I'm making these books, I got to learn how I'm going to, like, push them out to the people. Like, I got to, like, look up all the bookstores locally. Local bookstores, mind you, that's, for me personally, I'm just a big advocate for, like, local bookstores and putting books in there to kind of help that, you know. But, you know, on the self-publishing end, like, the pro is, like, everything, you know, you're in charge of everything, you know. You may, like, if you bring people in and all that, that's still you bringing them in and not, like, an entity bringing them in and all that. So you still have all the creative control. And I mean, it's all going to require, like, 10 times the work from you. But again, like, for me, I just didn't mind the work. So if you're someone who doesn't mind the work and you're not looking for the awards and all that, I think self-publishing is great because you can do it on your time, you know. And, like, literally, if I had, like, a book right now of, like, 150 pages, I'm like, okay, I got this and I got a cover. I want to publish this by next week. As a self-published author, I could do that today and have books by next week. With the publisher, it's probably not going to work that, you know, that seamless. So I think it all just depends on your pursuits, you know, and your intentions as a creative and what role you want to go. It's like, okay, I don't really care about the awards. I just want a product to push to the people. So publishing, oh, I'm trying to win awards, Pulitzer Prizes, and be recognized even. Maybe I want to be a poet laureate for the U.S. Okay, I got to go through a publisher and all that. So it just depends on what you're looking for, really.
Is that something you would want to be a poet laureate for the US or even locally?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I've had a couple people talk to me the last few months about like how we used to have poet laureateship here, like in our area, and they're actually doing the work of like pushing that to be a thing. So like, but again, for me, like it's a thing that like I'm grateful for, but it's kind of like the whole thing with Common Sense. I mean, I'm doing this because I love it. Like if that becomes a thing, great. But on a local level, but I definitely have like I think I've played with the idea of like what would it like for myself just imagining what would it would look like to be like a laureate over the US and what that would like require. So it's things that I have been thinking about as of recently, you
That would
know.
be so cool.
Yeah, no, it would. It definitely would be. So it's definitely something that's been in my mind and like, okay, like what would this look like? And you know, because I feel like as a writer, you know, I started with kind of like being somebody who's a who just wrote stories and all that, to being somebody who performs poetry. Now I'm kind of in the space of like I'm learning to kind of just be a poet in all entireties of that, like whether it be performance poems or if I'm just writing short form poems or creating nonfiction, you know. I think when you kind of open up yourself that way, it opens up to like the, you know, performance poets don't really look into like laureateships because that's just like, oh, I'm just trying to perform the written process, you know. We're not worried about the page process. So like for me opening up myself as a poet, it's made me look at these awards more. So like we'll see. It's definitely been in my mind. So how that unfolds, we'll see for sure.
Now, I know we're about to wrap it up, but before we do you have something else you would like to share? Like
Oh yeah,
another poem.
How about I do this? Because I shared a memorized one, so I'm gonna bounce it out and find a written one. Because I've been writing being in this like grad program. I mean, I'm always writing, but there's a lot of poems that I've been writing that have kind of like been outside my norm writing wise and like the styles and content and all that. So let me pull up a poem real quick to balance it out with perform one and a red one, because I tell people all the
Okay.
time, like, you
I
know, they
know.
don't I
Go
think some
ahead.
people get self-conscious about reading poems. So I'm like, hey, like reading poems is valid too. So let's find.
Yeah, I think so too. You know, there's a difference. Of course, I've learned this, and I didn't know I was doing this as a poet, but writing for the page versus writing for the stage. And I think when you go on the stage, I think the audience want to see you. They don't want to see you behind a piece of paper. They want you to be able to, you know, connect with them with your body language and things like that. And I just personally think that piece of paper takes away from that. Like, how can I concentrate on my audience when I'm connecting with this paper that is an inanimate object? Like, what am I doing? So I think that's the point. But some people, they do it anyway, and some people do it well.
And you know, like I'm like being somebody who's like I get drawn by seeing how someone's embodies their poem. So like I'm always for me, like I enjoy people who do the work of like memorizing their poems because that just brings a whole different
Yes.
feel, you know. But
Yes.
like you said, I know there's a poet, one of my friends is a poet in Chicago, Billy Tuggle, who memorizes poems and reads poems, and he does both very well. So it's just like it just depends on how, you know, well you're focusing on that performance part of the art, right?
That name
So
sounds so familiar to me. I wonder if I've ever come across him.
you probably have. Like he's an old like yeah he's a poet who's been around Chicago for forever. He's like a to me a poetry legend in Chicago. Really awesome guy. Very energetic. Still very active in poetry. He does slams and open mics and all that. And he yeah just a great poet altogether. He just published a book called A Tree Falls in the Hood. Actually, I think I have it now. He
I
because
like
I've
the
had
name of that.
yeah, it's a good book. I have all these poetry books down here, so it's somewhere down here, but definitely a poet to look into. But
Okay.
yeah, so I have this poem that I haven't really shared. So this is gonna be fun. I worked on this really heavily when I was at my residency. It's called a Porcelain Plate Blackness is what it's called. And the doors of cupboards slowly opened with insidious creak. As light cracked past hinges, a soft gold glow still harsh on eyes, blinded to rough fingers once again breaching body for its strength to do dirty work that they can't do, reaching up to pull us down one by one from shelf-like slave quarters, the hand of the host, whose voice is soft-spoken as a rose with thorns, looked at me with a curious condemnation and asked, "How strong are you?" Silence sits between us. Not due to our inability to speak, but by his inability to listen. As we are walked like a twisted waltz to a room for which we will be dined. Trusted to carry what is dished out. Assembly circled around dinner table, while knife and fork on each side make sure we stay in place. As dinner guests speak of the past, our past, as if they lived in our porcelain plate blackness, whose bodies tell stories like their stained glass windows. Ours, written as cave paintings in gold, a soft, shining one that rests our spirits, that predate doctrines discussed at table, our arrival to their manifest destiny, freedom fighters to their fighters of freedom, their July to our June that is spit out by history books, blamed for their breath lingering of blasphemy. Our godliness be dismissed as theory, utensil scratching into surface as food for thought is torn to bones, scraps, white sheets, napkins notifying hosts that they have had their way with us. Discarded the dishpan, as we are sailed to sink in which we will sit for weeks till our service is once again beckoned. We used to be washed by hands. Nowadays, our stench carried from neglect to be aberrant as we liken to lepers, exiled to dishwashers, cleaned, consecrated for council of congregants to whom they tell us to be under audience of. Smile, dance, be approachable, and just remember the fork and knife held to your backs. And once again, after our stories get scorned, flesh of meat been torn, bellies get filled, and history repeats. Rinse, repeat, rinse, repeat, rinse, repeat, in effort to scrub guilt from palms, same way they try to wipe our history from recipe books. The ones my mom kept in her cupboard, hidden within walls, only read by eyes who didn't have to squint to understand languages. Colloquialisms of Zora whose eyes watch God. Create the world through veins of aunties and uncles who planted next steps on 7 day. Parables from panthers, blacked out from table talks, painted as terrorists, illustrated our power in the people who pushed to back of the shelves at the end of night. Behind creaking door, whose soft loudness can never quiet our stories that echo earth. Answering those who question our strength, for this is for the ears to hear. How strong are we? We be strong as we be delicate. Poem.
Oh, that is lovely. My goodness. My goodness. You are so talented. Now, before I let you go, is there anything else that you would like to share that I didn't ask about? I know you have so much going on and we could probably talk for another hour.
Oh, absolutely. No, I think you did a great job sharing. I thank you again for giving me a space to kind of share, you know, my story, my thoughts, my poetry and all that. I'm always grateful for that. So thank you again for having this program, especially in the Midwest. You know, people need to have space to hear poets and their thoughts and all that. So I thank you for that. This has been a great interview. I've loved it.
All right. Thank you.